This episode of Revision Path is brought to you by Facebook Design. We talk about inspiration a lot here on Revision Path, so I wanted to ask this week's guest, Jacqueline Laye, a product designer at Facebook, what inspires her?
This is going to be interesting, but something that inspires me is tension and conflict. I think that when you're in a place where you have to strive to understand something that you don't, or there's conflict, you push past what you know, and you get to a point where you have a better understanding of like how you relate to other people and how you relate to the world. And that's something that I'm always seeking to like push myself into places that are uncomfortable for me.
Learn more at facebook.com/design. Are you looking for a job? Do you know someone who's looking for a job? Then check out our job board over at revisionpath.com/jobs. Whether you want a full-time job or you're looking for something temporary or freelance, we've got you covered. This week, Little Bird Innovation is looking for a design associate for their Memphis office. We also have job listings from Indeed.com, so head to the Revision Path job board at revisionpath.com/jobs to apply and to search for any other listings. Don't forget to sign up for our weekly job alert, so when there are new positions added to the job board, you'll get an email so you can be the first to apply. And if you're looking for more jobs, then become a member of our Slack community and join the jobs channel. See you there.
You're listening to the Revision Path Podcast, a weekly showcase of the world's Black graphic designers, web designers, and web developers. Through in-depth interviews, you'll learn about their work, their goals, and what inspires them as creative individuals. Here's your host, Maurice Cherry.
Welcome to the Revision Path Podcast. My name is Maurice Cherry, and before we get into this week's interview, let's talk about our sponsors, MailChimp and Hover. More than 10 million businesses around the world use MailChimp to send email newsletters. No other email service provider is better when it comes to both functionality as well as customer service. Sign up for a free account today at MailChimp.com. When you have a great idea, you want to secure a great domain name for it, and that's where Hover comes in. Hover makes it easy for you to find the domain name that you're looking for and get it up and running with no hassle and no heavy-handed upselling. So go ahead and grab yourself a domain today and use our promo code REVISIONPATH, and you'll save 10% off your purchase. Speaking of saving money, today is the last day for our Black Friday Cyber Monday sale in our store. Again, our store is at revisionpath.com/store, and you can save 15% off everything, t-shirts, hoodies, tote bags, mugs, and get free shipping. All you have to do is use the promo code 2016OMG. That's 2016OMG. Now again, that sale ends today, November 28th. I think we're going to have one more sale coming up soon, so keep your eyes open for that in case you missed this one. We'll have a link in the show notes. Here's our Patreon fundraising campaign update. So we're still at 40 patrons, but we've dropped down to $264 a month. Again, I want to thank all of you that have pledged your support and your appreciation for the show at any level that you pledge. Again, I really do appreciate it. If you enjoy what we're doing here at Revision Path, if you enjoy the guests that we have on the show, or if you've gotten any value from listening, I know I hear a lot coming from Twitter and from Facebook about how much people enjoy the show, please consider becoming a patron. It really helps keep the show going on a regular basis, and you'll get access to great perks like early access to future episodes and free Revision Path goodies. Just head on over to patreon.com/revisionpath and make that happen. Pledge levels are super affordable. They start at just $1 per month, and it's a great and affordable way to support the show on a regular basis. Now let's get on to this week's interview. We're finishing up our series from Facebook headquarters, and we're talking with product designer Jacqueline Laye. Let's start the show. All right, so tell us who you are and what you do.
I am Jacqueline Laye, and I am a product designer at Facebook.
How did you first get started here at Facebook?
Well, Facebook was actually like not a place that I thought about working or was interested in working for, but I was contacted by a design manager called Tori Hargrow, who, you know, told me about a position and was interested in talking to me I talked to him for about 8 months before I kind of decided to come.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just kind of came and I had an interview and I was really taken by the kind of warm vibe of the entire campus.
And then here you are. How soon from that interview did you get started?
Probably about 3 months.
So I know that there are some things you're working on that you can't talk about, but in general, can you talk about the work you do as a product designer here?
Yeah, so I'm a product designer on the media team, specifically with news. And I would say like the biggest thing that we are working on right now is trying to get the right type of news to the right person at the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
So really trying to understand what people are interested in and how we can get more of that content in front of them and less of the content that they may not be interested in. How do we like roll that away?
What's a typical day like for you here?
It's a lot of talking to people, talking to different teams. It's a lot of networking. Facebook is like an ecosystem. So it's, you might be working on one thing and there might be five other teams that have tried something similar or have done something similar. So you really have to make sure that you're connected and plugged in to like lots of other teams. So it's a lot of, oh, you might want to talk to this team. You might want to talk to that team. And really, there's a whole idea of the social graph is something that's really true within the company as well.
So with the work that you're doing here, I kind of want to go on your design journey. So
yeah.
We'll start way, way back. Tell me about where you grew up.
So I grew up in Ghana, which is in West Africa.
Okay.
My sisters and I were raised by my grandmother. I grew up in like this tiny little country in Western Africa, like right on the equator. And then my family moved to New York City when I was 10 years old, lived there, went to boarding school. I've always drawn. I've always been somebody that has painted and drawn and really loved art. I wrote a lot, but you know, being a West African and children of very African parents, there's like three professions that you can have in mm-hmm. order to not be a disgrace to your family. So it was like I could be a doctor or I could be a lawyer or I could be an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to college, I told my parents that I wanted to be an anthropologist. Mm. Like specifically, for some reason, I was really interested in Egypt. And I was like, I'm going to move to Cairo and be an Egyptologist.
Okay.
And they were like, no. How is that a profession?
Right.
I still kept on doing art. I still, like, computer science was just starting. Mm. So I started learning how to use the design programs. I would take like one-off classes, but I majored in like international politics and economics because that's what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I still really like didn't know if that was what I wanted to do. My heart and my passion was really in trying to do something that was more creative and that was more artistically expressive. So I took a design internship when I was like 18 years old just to kind of see what that whole world was about. And I ended up loving it. And I didn't realize that you could actually make money doing artistic work. So after I graduated, I still like took the LSAT, applied to law school, got into law school.
Wow.
Yeah. And my sister was actually in law school at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about to accept this law school admission. And I had a conversation with my sister and she was just like, if you decide to do law, if you decide to go into this completely other profession, like you can't be a designer. You can't do both. You have to choose. So it was this moment in my life where I really was looking at my parents and all of the all everything they had sacrificed for me, like bringing me to this country, putting me through boarding school, putting me through college, really wanting me to be successful and have this like career trajectory, mm-hmm. and throwing it all away in their mind and deciding to become like a designer, which like the iPhone wasn't even a thing at the time. So like nobody knew what product design was. Yeah.
Do they know what it is now?
I think so. I mean, my mom knows how to use Gmail and she like uses WhatsApp on a daily basis. But so they do understand what product design is now and they're incredibly proud of me. But it was a journey to yeah. get them to the point where they saw what I did, not just as, you know, art, mm-hmm. but as a real profession solving real problems.
Yeah. Your mom's better than mine is. She's just started learning how to text
recently. Oh, really?
And so now I get all these crazy misspelled emoji texts. I'm like, she's learning.
Right?
I get it. She's learning.
I'm trying to get my mom to create her own Bitmoji. I feel like that's...
That's advanced. That's pretty advanced. Baby steps.
Baby steps. Yeah. One thing in front of the other. They know what Facebook is. So that's positive.
Well, that's good. Yeah. That's good. I mean, yeah. but they're like you said, they're proud of you now. They understand
where you've come from. They're incredibly proud of me now.
That's awesome. Yeah. Where'd you go to school?
I went to Middlebury up in Vermont, where Quidditch is a sport.
Wow.
The first college to have Quidditch as a national NASCAR sport, by the way.
Did you play?
Ooh, I cannot answer that question. I'm not trying to put myself on blast right now.
Okay, okay.
I'm trying to keep all my cards close to my chest.
All right, okay. What'd you study there?
International politics and economics.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You're saying that. Okay.
But I did a double major because I'm that nerdy in fine art.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the fine arts part of what you learned at Middlebury kind of helped prepare you when you started to get out and become a designer or look at design careers?
Yeah, I think it, to me, like at my core, I don't know if I really consider myself to be a designer as much as I consider myself to be an artist. Like I'm a painter. I illustrate. I was represented by art galleries. I've always seen, even when I'm designing, the first mentor I had was one of the best designers I've ever encountered. But she was also an artist first and foremost. So I learned during my mentorship and my first internship to see every design as like a canvas. So like when I open up Photoshop or Sketch, I just see it as a canvas. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of like, what am I going to paint? What story am I going to tell?
So to you, how do you see the difference between a designer and an artist?
I think that it's probably when I was doing art, like when I was painting and showing, it was primarily like all the art that I was creating was for myself. And I was really thinking about how I saw the world and what the story that I was going to tell to people about me and about myself and about my journey. As a designer, I think it's design is the most outward looking thing I've ever done. It's not what do I want to create? What story do I want to tell for myself? It's how do I help people tell their stories? Mm-hmm. And how do I help people understand the stories that, you know, my client or my company is trying to tell them? It's much more outward looking design and art, I think, is much more inward looking. You're doing it for yourself.
Do you have sort of a personal philosophy, I guess, then, you know, since you've come from that background where you were studying fine arts, creating fine arts, do you bring any sort of philosophy to design that you've gleaned from that?
I think probably the biggest challenge that I've had in changing my philosophy is that we always, right now when we think of product design, a lot of it is about functionality and things being functional. And I kind of have a tension with that where I think there's space for product and product design to incorporate like functionality and beauty. And really creating products that are both beautiful and fluid, as well as just like functional and getting like from point A to point B. That's something that I always like try to insert in my work.
So I'm interested about this, about you growing up in Ghana. I've had, I want to say, maybe one or two people on the show who either also are from Ghana or they're currently in Ghana.
Whoa. In Ghana.
Yeah, I think, actually the guy that I interviewed from Ghana, his name is Jeffrey Mainu. I think he lives out here now.
In the Bay Area?
I think he does. I have to check.
There are a lot of Nigerians here, but there are not many Ghanaians that I've seen or met.
I want to say he does. He's a startup guy. I remember his episode is like it's in the early 30s, like 31 or something like that. But he talks about how he started a school and started a design agency there. And eventually he's moved. I want to say he's here. He's either here on the Bay Area, in the Bay Area, or he's in Connecticut. I think he was in,
those are
I know that those are far. I think he was in Connecticut and then moved to the Bay.
Connecticut sounds much more accurate.
I'm gonna double check. Do you bring any sort of I don't know, like inspiration or sensibilities from growing up there into your work now?
Ooh, I've never thought about that. That's something that I've never thought about. I think that I'm sure that I do, because being a Ghanaian is, to me, it's the number one way that I identify myself. Like, I see myself as Ghanaian and I see myself as African before anything else. I think that the most important, if I were to say that something about my upbringing, my background comes across, it's this idea of like resilience. Like I just told you, I've had to fight to prove that being a designer is a valid profession. And when you come from the type of family that I come from, which was one of the most loving families, but also one of the most, like, a story of resilience. Mm-hmm. When you're in an environment like this, which is very, very like competitive and hardcore and intense, you have to have this like essence of resilience, but also grounding and knowing who you are and knowing where you come from. And I think that's probably why like being Ghanaian is my number one identifier, because I can always turn back and be like, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. This is where I come from. I come from a place where people are resilient, and I come from a country and a history where we can like basically do anything.
No, that's,
I don't know if that answers the question.
No, that totally answers the question. I mean, that's something that, a lot of Black people in America can't really give that same type of perspective. I mean, we can say, like, I can say, I'm from Alabama.
Yeah. You're from Alabama?
Yeah. Like, okay. I can say I'm from Alabama, but, you know, if I go out further than that, like I did the whole, you know, ancestry DNA thing, and it shows that we're originally from Togo.
That's right next door.
It's right next door.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, because I wonder now, as I think about ways that my mom is and things that she instilled in me, and then I look at, you know, the Togolese and see how they are, I wonder if that's something that I just like picked up instinctually.
Yeah.
You know?
I think probably so. Like, but we just had this whole Black Leadership Day where we came together as a community, and a lot of like Facebook has a very diverse family, and a lot of us are from completely different backgrounds. From there are people from Alabama and North Carolina and Nigeria and South Africa. And it's, you walk into this room and you see this like colorful like family where we're all Black, but we all have completely different experiences. Yet there are very strong commonalities between our resilience and our work ethic and our dedication. And I look at some people and I'm like, you are Ashanti. Like, you are from Ghana. You just don't know it. Like, when I see people eating, like, the collard greens and the I'm like, you know we eat that. And the rice and peas. I'm like, you know we eat that in Ghana, right? Like, you did not. You got that from us. Like, we are. There's this lineage that's there. And as an African, it's really cool to be in a place where you see so many people that look like you but have completely different backgrounds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they got here through completely different paths.
Do you still kind of keep in touch with things that are going on in Ghana? Like,
yeah.
You do?
Yeah, my mom is actually in Ghana right now.
Okay,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, that's why she was like using WhatsApp. Trying to talk to us here. But yeah, my family, we go back every year. Half my family is still there. Mm-hmm. We have like a very active WhatsApp group. So there was like we had a rainy season like a few months ago, and there was like a huge flood. And that was like the first thing that I saw when I woke up, because my aunts and uncles were just like posting in the group about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you thought about, I mean, with your talents and with your skills that you have you thought about taking it back to your country in some sort of way?
Yes. Yes. My husband works for the World Bank in West Africa.
Okay.
So he spends a lot of time in like Senegal and Cote d'Ivoire, some time in Ghana, Togo, Cameroon. And we've talked about, and Facebook is also like opening up offices, investing very heavily in Africa. And so it's, you know, we have an office in South Africa. Mark was just in Nigeria trying to like look at the startup culture and the entrepreneurship there. I would love to have more of a presence on the continent and really show what I know the like potential of Africa is. I think there is so much potential in that entire continent. I would love to go back. I would go back in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. I think of some of the most touching and informative interviews that I've had on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they've usually been from people that are in different countries in Africa. They're in South Africa, or they're in Guinea. I still remember this one interview with this kid. He's like 21. He lives in Nairobi.
Yeah.
And I mean, extremely brilliant. Like, he's exhibited at art galleries throughout the city, created his own font. And like, he's completely self-taught.
Created his own font?
Yeah. It was called, what's the name of the font? Charvet, I think it is. It's episode 24, Kevin Karanja. Super talented kid. He's like 20, 21.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I wonder what he could do if he had the resources that we have here.
Yeah. What I think is crazy is like you look at the African American like history in this country, and you look at the like African history, and you look at black people across the entire diaspora, and you look at like all of the hardships that we have faced historically, mm-hmm. from slavery to colonialism to like institutional like racism and what's going on right now with Black Lives Matter, and you look at all of the hardships that we have faced and the what we have been able to do despite all of that, and you think about what we could do as a whole community, all people, mm-hmm. if we could raise each other up, what we as a human race could be like capable of, and what Africa as a continent and what certain groups could be capable of, if we're capable of that now with all of this like this hardships that we've gone through, what else are we capable of, you know?
Right. Yeah, I really think
not
that,
to get too like political, but
no, that's fine.
I feel very strongly about that.
No, that's fine, and I totally agree with you. I mean, mm-hmm. at least I think what I'm doing with Revision Path is kind of helping a little bit with that, and just mm-hmm. at least showing people that these are possibility models that you can follow. These are people that are in the industry that look like you,
yeah,
or maybe that don't look like you, but they're doing this kind of work, and you need to know about the work that they're doing. So.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that. Do you feel like you're satisfied creatively between your fine arts work and the work that you're doing here at Facebook?
I think so. I think with my fine art stuff, it's very much about self-expression, and it's about me processing how I feel in my personal life, how I feel in society, how society views me. Mm-hmm. At Facebook, I think there are so many really meaty problems that we are trying to solve as a company, and the scale at which we're trying to do it, connecting the whole world and being, as Africa's is a part, Africa and South America, I would say, are two places that I'm really passionate about, and seeing the work that we are doing there to really understand how these different, like, how, what does technology look like in these places? How do these people connect with each other? How do these people connect with the world? How does the world connect with these remote parts of the globe? It's very challenging, and it's something that definitely, like, there is no end.
Now, you're based out of New York City.
Yes.
How do you see the design community there? Like, what's it like for you?
The Facebook design community there? Or the design community in general?
Just in general, yeah.
I think the design community in New York is incredibly rich and incredibly diverse. In New York, I find myself completely stimulated by designers that are not just in tech, but are doing fashion, and they're doing architecture, and they're doing art, and they're working on cars, they're working in print, they're working in magazines. The art community, like the design community, I would say in New York, is really an art community. And you have access, I think, in New York to people and to museums and exhibits. I think we're really fortunate to have that. I think it's still, in terms of tech, I think it's starting to thrive. I think it's still growing. The communities there are smaller, which I think helps it become more close-knit. When you start to have, like, a really powerful industry concentrated in a really, really small space, you have a lot of room for innovation, but you kind of lose this, like, there's only a few of us, and we need to stick together, and we really need to push on each other. The larger that community becomes, the smaller those spaces are, and the more you're kind of like, wait, where do I fit in? How do I navigate this? So we have the advantage in New York of, at least in tech, of having a smaller group, at least at this point, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I was also going to ask,
it's probably controversial, but
no. I mean, I think as a follow-up to that, I would say, what do you want to see more of out of the design community in general?
If I'm going to be very, very real, I would really love to see the design community as a whole really try to focus on targeting and connecting some groups that are not as represented in media and in tech. Mm-hmm. When I use Instagram, or when I use Twitter, when I use Facebook, mainly Instagram and Twitter, I see, like, Afropunk, like, their page, like Blativity, their page. There's so many of these smaller groups that are trying to connect with their own communities, and they're trying to amplify their own voices using social media in any way that they can to create this, like, online digital community. I would love to see the larger design community in Silicon Valley and New York really look at these groups and say, what they're doing now, we can help amplify their voice even further. How do we reach these very, very specific demographics? That's something that I think there's a huge opportunity.
Why do you think that's not happening now?
Ooh.
You said you were getting real.
Like, walked right into that. Lord have mercy. I think it's probably not happening because of this question that you asked me previously about diversity. when you have a company and you have an environment where, or you're in a room and everybody in that room has the same experience as you, everybody in that room is thinking the same way that you're thinking and has a similar background, if you have one person in that room that's like, no, that is not my experience, that's not what I've gone through, this is not where I'm coming from, like, I'm not coming from the same place that you're coming from, everybody suddenly turns to that one person. It's like, then they're like, tell us about your experience. Mm-hmm. Help us connect. And so that we can connect with people that are like you. We need more people in those types of rooms. Mm-hmm. And right now, those rooms are not diverse enough. And I think it's a lot of it is oversight. Like, we are not reaching out to these like demographics because we just don't have enough people that are speaking up and saying we should be connecting these people as well.
Yeah, that is so true. I can tell you, like, in the early-ish days of when I did Revision Path, it was that same way. I think it was right after I got my first sponsor, and I was like, I'm going to reach out to the rest of the design community and let them know about this show and this design podcast. And I would reach out to other design podcasts, and I would recommend myself as a guest. I would recommend guests that I've had, and I mean completely shut out.
Yeah,
like, didn't even want to respond to an email, or if they did respond, it was like, you know, well, we're good, we've already got everyone for the year. I'm like, it's February. there's no way you've booked everyone for the whole year. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So I know what you mean. There does need to be more of that.
I think it's slowly changing, but I think we need to keep pushing. We need to keep looking at rooms. Like, when I was at the Black Leadership Day, it was an amazing event, and there were, I looked around and I saw how diverse the Facebook community was, but we were all in one room, and this was the first time that the event had happened. We're all in this one room, and I was like, look how much more powerful I feel. I feel so much more powerful seeing so many people in this room that look like me. And I feel like I can accomplish so much more because my voice feels like it's going to be amplified.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have a common goal, which is the larger like Facebook goal. But we also have an experience that is unique, that is shared.
Was that the first time that Facebook did that event?
Yes.
Wow. That's dope. I remember.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I bet it was. Yeah. I remember in 2015, I went to, there was a Black in Design conference at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Harvard Graduate School, the Black Student Union inside the Harvard Graduate School. We're like, we're going to put together this two-day conference. And it was mostly urban planners and architects, although they mm-hmm. just called it like Black in Design.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that might have initially deterred a lot of people from wanting to get involved, because they're like, oh, well, I'm a product designer. Why would I go to that, or something like that?
Yeah.
I decided to go because I've never seen that type of conference before.
Yeah.
The most expensive ticket was $50.
What?
Yeah. And so I said, well, I can do that. I can swing that. And so I flew up to Boston for that. And I mean, it's so rare that you go to a design event that affirms you as both a designer and as a Black person.
Yeah.
Because while they didn't have, you know, hands-on type of, you know, technical products, you know, shows or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
you got to see how other people use design in their communities.
Yes.
And so they did this sort of model where they started from, I think they said, like, design at the block, at the city, at the region, and at the country or something. Like, they took it out. And so you got to see how a guy designs these dinners to introduce like good eating habits into his community.
What?
Or you got to see how this woman designed this huge, like,
changes your way of thinking about like design, in quotation.
Yeah, this one designer, she designed this huge sort of like a public art installation, but it also touched on kind of the Brazilian slave trade and everything like that. And it does. It takes your mind out of it. You're like, what am I using my design stuff for?
Yes.
I could be taking what I do to a whole other level.
Yeah.
And it just like left you with that food for thought. They mm-hmm. had soul yoga in the morning.
What?
They had
What is that? Like, is that when you do yoga and you like eat chicken?
No, they were doing yoga to like, God, what was it? Was yoga, but then like she was incorporating like Marvin Gaye lyrics into it and everything. And
interesting. Is that still a thing?
It probably is.
Huh.
And then they had like a catered lunch by Brian Terry, who is like this well-known soul food chef. They're going to have it again in 2017.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to be there.
What's crazy is that as I like experience this industry more and more, these things are happening, which is really, really exciting. Like we are in here and we are creating these events and we are connecting each other and we are creating this larger network. And I think we're just going to keep seeing this type of thing grow. And our numbers are going to grow.
Absolutely. What advice would you give to somebody that wants to follow in your footsteps and be a product designer?
Don't be an engineer and don't be a lawyer. Design is a real job. I would say that the number one thing is don't be afraid. Being a product designer is really what you make of it. It's really about, at the end of the day, it's really about solving problems.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the other things will come. If you don't know everything from day one and you look at somebody and it seems like they have it all figured out, they probably don't. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to be honest about what you don't know. Don't be afraid to reach out to people that you see on public figures or social media or Twitter. If you see designers out there that you admire, that you like, that you're inspired by, reach out to them. Like I said, it's for me, what I'm really learning now, especially working at Facebook, is that it's all about your social network and it's all about the connections that you make.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make those connections and you have to put yourself out there, not just in terms of like talking to people, but really being honest about what inspires you, what motivates you, and not being afraid to go after that thing.
How are you putting yourself out there?
I'm doing this interview right now. I am not somebody who is comfortable talking in a mic or talking on a stage. So this is not something that is like my forte.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that something that you want to do in the future? Like in terms of putting yourself out there, are there other ways that you've thought about doing that might not be those things, podcasting or speaking or anything?
I thought about writing. I think that, you know, being at Facebook, it's very different than what people would think. Facebook is an incredibly supportive, like I feel like I have a very, very strong support system. And I think that in talking to a lot of my friends who are product designers or are creative people who may not necessarily know what it's like in a place like this, there are assumptions that you make based on whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to understand that this is a place for us. Like every place is a place for us. You have to be brave and you have to make your own decision and you have to not be afraid. So I've thought about writing and I've thought about that because I want people to understand that, again, every place is for us. And if you put yourself out there, like I'm hoping to do, soon, you might influence somebody, you might change somebody's mind, you might prevent somebody who was going to go to law school. Like my sister, when she was in law school, she was the one that really, like, her words touched me and made me choose between law and design.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone that, like her, to be that powerful in my life, I want to make sure that people know that all the options that are in front of them.
I definitely think writing is great. I spoke with Cella Lewis,
mm-hmm.
who her interview came out on Halloween. and she also writes. She has a website. It's called Inherent Design Cella Lewis. And she writes about design topics and things of that nature. Because when I spoke with her, she said the reason that she does it is that there's just not that many Black design voices out there.
Yeah.
Let alone Black design voices from women.
Yeah.
And she's like, true. I want to be able to put at least my stake on how I feel about certain things. Because she's like, I have feelings about things and I want to express them. And
yeah.
This is the easiest way for me to do it is to just put it out there
yeah.
in words. And those design voices need to be out there because yeah. they're mostly not. I mean, there are a few, but it's just not as widespread. Like if someone asked you to name 5 Black design writers.
Lord Jesus.
Exactly. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I actually can't think of any. But can you think of one? Who? You?
Well, I guess me, yeah.
You?
Me, well, that's cheating because I employ people that do that. So that's
there was
cheating.
That guy. Well, there was that guy from Twitter, no?
Leslie Miley?
Something.
I don't know if he's writing.
He wrote on, there was like Medium. I read him on Medium. Wasn't there on Medium some?
From Twitter. Oh, right? I think you're talking about Mark Lucky. Maybe that's him, but he's not a designer though.
Oh yeah, no, he was in engineering, no?
He was in like marketing.
Oh, okay.
The engineering guy was Leslie Miley.
Yes, Leslie Miley.
Yeah. I'm trying to think like design voices. I would think Gail Anderson. Mm-hmm. But see, I'm thinking that are like writing a lot or writing at least regularly. Like she writes books.
Mm-hmm.
And like she just had a book that came out this year called Outside of the Box.
Yeah, that's true. There are not. Many and so they're,
and it's like you gotta start somewhere, even if it's on a blog, and then you kind of build it up. So, it's
food for thought.
It's definitely food for thought, and hopefully for people that are listening, that is inspiring them if they're thinking of a way to get into it. Like I always tell designers that say they want to find a way to kind of be more marketable and things like that. I tell them like keep a blog of some sort, like write about your design process, write about how you feel about a certain design. Because I think we all know when something is badly designed.
Yeah, everyone writes articles and does YouTube everything.
Right, but it's
when Spotify changed their green, everyone was like, let me tell you how I feel about that.
Right, right. But like be able to at least say that and articulate that in a way where someone can see, okay, this person has a distinct design voice.
Yeah.
Or they have a distinct way of looking at the design community or design things, which can be hard to tell because I look at a lot of the sites that Black designers have and they're just portfolios. It's just
but it's also
a picture
hard,
gallery.
Right. But Maurice, it's also hard when I feel like I agree with you, but at the same time, it's a lot of pressure because you're in the space, you're trying to navigate. You're trying to understand what your role is being Black in a new space. You are trying to just like make a dollar out of 15 cents and just like chill.
Yeah.
And then somebody throws this on top of you and they're like, oh, also write. Also like just keep a blog. And you're like, okay, like let me just.
No, I understand.
Give me 6 months. Give me a year. Like I feel you and I understand that. But I also think that it's important to recognize that there is already a lot of pressure on us as a whole to make it here.
And, this is true.
And I think that it is incredibly important for us to have an external voice and to talk about that and to write about that. I just think you have to balance that with like, we don't want to burn out.
Yeah. I mean, it's important even to acknowledge that the pressure exists.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's something that the general design community may know. Mm-hmm. That there was a piece that we did on our site earlier this year called Double Consciousness in Design.
Yes. Everything we do it for the community, whether you know you're doing it or not. And there is a need to be an example and to not only be an example, but to bring people in and to pull people in and like internally, like within you.
Yeah.
So it's just you don't have the same mentality that other people would have when they're writing a Medium, you know, writing a Medium article or writing a book
or designing a shot on Dribbble or something.
It's, exactly. Yeah.
It feels like there's more.
It's more weight.
There's definitely more weight. Mm-hmm. That is so true. I it's funny because I think about, I'd say maybe the first year when I was doing Revision Path, I wanted to do these Kwanzaa graphics.
Interesting.
Like a little, like just a little, you know, 600 by 600 something for every day of Kwanzaa, but the days would relate to certain themes that were prevalent throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to remember what they were for last year. I want to say Kuumba, which is creativity, was modeled after the Wiz Live. Mm-hmm. And I think Nia was modeled after Maya Angelou.
Yeah.
Imani was modeled after Kendrick Lamar's All Right video.
Yes.
And so, like, I felt like I wanted to do something that, you know, because for me, I mean, it's probably, for people that are listening, probably think, like, oh, it's weird you celebrate Kwanzaa. But, I mean, I celebrate it in the way that I look at it as a period of self-reflection at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And each of those principles lets you kind of look back through the year and see, well, what did I do that matched those themes? Like, I'm not putting on a dashiki and lighting the canard or anything like that, but...
Oh, is that what they do in Kwanzaa?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, like, I'm looking at the principles and seeing, okay, how did they apply to my year? Mm-hmm. And what can I take out of what this message is or something like that? Right. So, I don't think any other designer, and when I say other designer, I mean maybe a non-black designer is going to... They might look at Kwanzaa and think it's just fake Christmas.
Yeah.
So it's
true.
More weight. Yeah, definitely more weight.
More weight. Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the hardest part about what you do?
The hardest part about what I do. Ooh. There's not enough time. I feel like I always want to get like to 6 months ahead. And I just have to keep remembering that, like, everything that we do as designers, as product designers in the tech industry, it's all about iteration.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn before you can keep going.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, you just want to get to the end and you're just kind of like, no, let's take two steps and then reevaluate and then take one more step. And then maybe we have to take three steps back. So I think just having patience, I think is probably the hardest, especially when you're designing at such a large scale.
Mm-hmm.
One problem is not the same as like one problem when you're designing for a much smaller company. You're just like, oh my God.
Yeah. What are you excited about at the moment?
This might sound really like cliche, but I'm really excited about my community here. Like, I'm really, really excited about my community here. Like,
no, that's good.
The leadership day that we had and just being so plugged in and so connected to so many people that share the same background as I do and can understand where I'm coming from and seeing that family coming from like South Africa and London and Dublin and like Austin and DC and like everyone flying in and really feeling like I have roots here makes me excited about like everything else and the potential, the future potential, and seeing that family grow.
Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? Like, what kind of work would you like to be doing?
I really, really like what I'm doing now in terms of media. I think that there is so much, potential for the future of media, like what we're seeing with like virtual reality and this mixture of like the real world and the virtual world and giving people more voice and giving people more agency, like we've seen with some of the live videos and some of the things that have come out from the live videos. Just continuing to pull back and allowing people and people's voices to come to the forefront. I'm really, really excited about that. And I think media is like the right place.
Well, Jacqueline, just to kind of wrap things up, where can our audience find out more about you and about your work online?
I do not know because I don't really like promote myself. Facebook?
Okay, so like just search for you on Facebook?
Yeah, Facebook or just my website, which I don't update, sorry.
What's your website address?
JackieLaye.com. I should probably start a blog.
You could start a blog.
I should.
Get that, flex that design writing muscle.
Yeah, I know, you're right. Maybe I'll write some Medium posts.
There you go. Yeah. Well, Jacqueline, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing your journey. I mean, I really think it's, we had a lot of, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that you mentioned earlier about growing up in Ghana and how you transitioned in terms of that journey to here. That is, I find it personally inspiring. I hope people that are listening find that inspiring as well. I mean, because, you know, that whole notion of having that strong work ethic. And,
yeah.
And you know, one of the questions I also sometimes ask people is what are the best things that they owe their parents? And based on what you've said thus far, certainly what you owe your parents is opportunity to be here.
And I would not be even the them wanting to me to be a doctor or a lawyer, it's because they expected the best out of me.
Right.
But at the end of the day, they allowed me to choose what I wanted to excel in the most. And it wasn't what they wanted. It was what I wanted. And they still supported me.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing that they taught me was whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability and be the best at that thing. I owe everything to them. I really do.
Well, I certainly think that you have a super strong point of view. Mm-hmm. I really hope to hear more from you in the future. And again, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thoughts of love are
in your mind. And that's it for this week. Big thanks to Jacqueline Laye, and thanks to you for listening. You can find out more about Jacqueline and her work through the links in the show notes at revisionpath.com. Thanks as always to our sponsors, Facebook Design, MailChimp, and Hover. Facebook invests in design. They care deeply about how their design team might do their best work, and that manifests itself in a number of different ways, such as building tools like Origami, sharing what they've learned on Medium, and by giving back to the design community. Learn more about Facebook Design at facebook.com/design. More than 10 million businesses around the world use MailChimp to send email newsletters. The attitude may be playful, but their business is serious. Sign up for a free account today. MailChimp. Send better email. Hover takes all the hassle and confusion out of buying and managing your domains. Search for a few keywords, and Hover will show you the best available options across all the 400-plus domain extensions out there. Ready to get started? Save 10% off your first purchase by using the promo code REVISIONPATH at checkout. This episode was edited by RJ Basilio and produced by me, Maurice Cherry. Our intro voiceover is by Music Mandre, with intro and outro music by Yellow Speaker. If you like this episode, please do me a huge favor. Leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It only takes a minute or two. It really helps the show get out there so more people can see it, because it pushes us up in the iTunes rankings for design podcasts. And I'll even read your review right here on the show. Revision Path is brought to you by Lunch, a multidisciplinary creative studio in Atlanta, Georgia. If you like the work we're doing with the podcast and with the website, then visit us over at Patreon and become a patron. Just go to patreon.com/revisionpath and pledge your support. Pledge levels start at just $1 a month, and you'll get access to behind-the-scenes information about the show, upcoming interviews, and so much more. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.